You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Song. Good morning, and welcome to the second and the most exciting week of our Marriage Work series. My name is Justin. This is my wife, Stephanie.
Yes, and Justin and I have been to several continuing education conferences, and so we're very much aware of how important it is to know the credentials of those who are speaking to you.
Very important.
So we want to share those with you. So these are my credentials.
You can see here, let's see, Steph, she has a couple bachelor's degrees, biochemistry, nursing. She's a master's in nursing. She's a nurse practitioner of women's health, actually, a speaker at conferences and meetings. She's been married almost 20 years to a really great guy, and she has almost 20 years of sexual experience.
Which,
quite the credentials.
Yes, so, and here's Justin. Justin loves sex.
There you go. There you go. Does it need to be anything more than
a
that?
A lot.
Oh, a lot, yes.
So,
No, seriously, we're not up here because our sex lives are perfect or that we have it all together as a couple, but we are comfortable talking about sex. We are comfortable about being open with our sex lives, and we think we're pretty good at it, the sex, that is.
So the point for today, not that, we should move on, is that when you follow God's plan for when you follow God's plan for sex. And here's the take home. God's design is for married couples to have sex regularly, and anything other than that falls short of the best for you.
You know, we believe that God created sex, that he designed it, and it's not just for making babies. It's one of those good and perfect gifts that James talks about that came down from above. We believe fully that God is pro-sex.
So if you're married and you're not having sex, or if you're married and you're not enjoying sex, then you're missing out on God's perfect gift for you in your relationship.
Yeah, and we read this quote by this fellow by the name of Steven Schwambach, and this is what he says. This is a really neat quote. Anybody who has ever experienced great lovemaking instinctively knows the truth. Sex is too good to have just happened. It didn't evolve as the result of some cosmic accident. Something this exquisite has to have been lovingly, brilliantly, creatively designed. And we believe that God was that designer, that creator. So the passage that we're going to focus on this morning comes out of 1 Corinthians 7, verses 1 through 6. And let's look at it, and we're going to answer the following question. The question is this: why is sex in marriage important? So let's first get a little bit of background. 1 Corinthians was written by the Apostle Paul to the church at Corinth, and this is a church that he had planted years earlier. Corinth was a major trade center and a seaport in southern Greece. And throughout its history, Corinth was known as a city that was filled with sexual immorality. This was mainly because of Aphrodite's temple being there. She was the Greek goddess of love. One of the things that her temple was known for were the temple prostitutes. And so if you go up to worship Aphrodite, you would worship her by taking advantage of the temple prostitutes. So, the church at Corinth was surrounded by this sexually misguided culture, and so there was a lot of confusion, and there was disagreement among the Christ followers about what role sex was actually to play in marriage. So you had some of these Christ followers who were still continuing to participate in the sexual immorality of the culture around them, okay? But then you had the other Christ followers who wanted to get as far away from sexual immorality as possible. So far, in fact, that they even questioned whether sex even belonged in marriage. And this led the church leaders then to ask Paul, and they asked Paul this question: is it good to have sexual relations? Essentially what they're asking Paul is, should we just stop having sex so that we don't sin? Okay? And this is where our passage picks up. So, verses 1 and 2 here, we're going to be talking from the message this morning. We like how it presents this. Now, getting down to the questions you asked in your letter to me. First, I'm sorry, you should be reading this, but that's all right.
Okay.
First, is it a good thing to have sexual
relations?
Is it a good thing to have sexual relations? Certainly. but only within a certain context. It's good for a man to have a wife and for a woman to have a husband. So, back to our question. Why is sex in marriage important? Well, the first thing that we think is that it is designed for marriage. Okay, so you see these first two verses, sex is good within the context of marriage. In fact, the act of making love is really what seals the marriage covenant.
See, marriage isn't just a contract between two people. It's actually a covenant between two people and God. It's spiritual. And when we see in the Bible often the sealing or the... when we seal a covenant in the Bible, you often see bloodshed. So in the Old Testament, two people who are entering into a covenant would slaughter an animal and cut it in half and walk in between that animal. And then in the New Testament, Jesus brought the new covenant by shedding his blood for the forgiveness of our sins. In the same way, marriage is a covenant. So by God's perfect design, when a man and woman come together on their wedding night for the very first time, there's bloodshed, and that seals their covenant. And every single time that man and woman come together in the marriage bed, they are renewing and firming up the covenant that they made before the Lord.
Yeah, and this is what Scripture refers to as one flesh. We see this phrase used repeatedly throughout the Bible. In Mark 10, we find it where it says, "But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. And for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. And so they are no longer two, but one flesh." And this one flesh idea refers not just to the physical, but also the emotional and the spiritual union of two people in this marriage covenant. It's really this intertwining of souls.
Yeah, and one flesh is about being known in no other way, by the super deepness being known by that one human that you have no other relationship like in the world. And that's why a fulfilling sex life in marriage is one of the strongest glues for that relationship.
So why else is sex in marriage important? Okay, it was designed for marriage, what we just saw, but because desire, sexual desire, is strong. And we see this in verse 2. You know, sexual drives are strong, but marriage is strong. You can be advancing slides here, is it? Maybe it's not advancing here. Sexual drives are strong, but marriage is strong enough to contain them and provide for a balanced and fulfilling sexual life in a world of sexual disorder.
So when we think of strong sex drives, automatically we think of men because just they generally have a stronger sex drive than women do. But research shows that men actually think about sex about twice as much as women do.
Not every 7 seconds. Some people say that. It's not every 7 seconds.
But for women, maybe it's not so much that physical sex drive, but it's more of a drive for intimacy and affection.
Yeah, and these are still forms of sexual desire. Marriage is the only place where we can have sexual desire for someone without sinning. You can fantasize about your spouse, perfectly normal, perfectly good. You can long for your spouse. You can want to get it on with your spouse. And that's okay. That's very healthy. And marriage is the only place that we can fulfill our sexual desires with someone without sinning. And in this way, marriage is able to contain sexual desire.
So Paul notes here at the end of the verse that the Corinthians were surrounded by a world of sexual disorder. And all we need to do is look around us and know that we're basically in that same world. If you watched the Super Bowl last week and happened to watch the halftime show, which I did not, but anyhow, we're full of sexual disorder in our world. And the whole spirituality of sex and the whole covenant marriage thing about sex has been removed from it. It's just become a physical outlet.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for us to see that sex has strayed very far from the way God intended. So marriage for the Corinthians and for us gives us a proper outlet for sexual desire so that we can stand against the world of sexual disorder.
So we should have that it's designed for marriage, that desires are strong, and now it's a decision to serve one another.
Go ahead. He'll keep up.
So verses 4 and 5 say that the marriage bed must be a place of mutuality, the husband seeking to satisfy the wife and the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Marriage is not a place to stand up for your rights. It's a decision to serve the other, whether in bed or out.
Yeah, in marriage, this whole idea of being in the marriage bed or out, you know, we should be striving to put each other first, to serve one another, to take care of one another's needs. Andy Stanley has this really great quote. We might have referenced it before. But happy couples put each other first by going first in an effort to be last. So always putting your spouse above yourself. Marriage is all about mutual submission. And when this is done well in all areas of marriage, including in the sexual relationship of our marriage, it leads to this fulfilling relationship that God intended marriage to be. But you know, here's the problem. We are very selfish creatures. Submitting to anyone, even our spouse, doesn't come naturally to us. And that's why Paul in here says it is a decision. It has to be a decision.
So when it comes to sex, serving your spouse means that we should be seeking to satisfy our spouse's sexual needs. But here's the problem. My needs and my spouse's needs don't always match.
What?
I know, mind blown.
Crazy.
Sometimes it's about deciding to be available to our spouse, regardless of whether or not we are in the mood. But it's also about graciously meeting that need for your spouse. There will be times when one of you will have sex with your spouse out of obligation, or what we call mercy sex. But you do this out of love. It's not an obligation or a duty. See, when deciding to be available to your spouse, the most important thing is the posture of your heart. Is it out of love? Is it out of service to your spouse because you love your spouse? Or is it out of duty and just resentment, basically? There was one night, and so we're going to be pretty frank in this discussion. That's why we got the students out of here. We're going to share a little bit about our lives. And so if you hate us or think we're weird after this, so be it. But anyhow, there was one night we had already decided we were going to have sex that night. He was already in bed, and I was brushing my teeth. And all I could think of was, oh, I just so don't want to have sex tonight. I just don't. And I had a bad attitude. But I wasn't going to back out, right?
So, thank you.
So I'm in the bathroom, and I'm praying. And I just stopped. Like, I had a heart check. And I just started to pray. And I said, Lord, please give me a desire for Justin like you want me to have. And we won't go into details, but it was a very, very good night. And that just goes to show that God is in this. He is so into sex for us because he made it for us, and he wants us to enjoy it.
Paul goes on here to talk, and he says, when it's not okay, or when it's okay to not serve your spouse in this capacity, he says, abstaining from sex is permissible for a period of time if you both agree to it, and if it's for the purposes of prayer and fasting, but only for such times, then come back together again. So the only legitimate reason here, according to the passage, to intentionally withhold sex from your spouse and not serve them is when you're taking time off for fasting and prayer and when you both agreed to it.
Yeah, so ladies, out with the headache excuse, in with the, sorry, dear, but I'm fasting today.
Yeah, well. But listen, if your spouse is like fasting for a week or two, you should start to get suspicious. You know, the Greek here can also be translated as do not rob one another. Do not rob one another of this amazing connection with your spouse that can only be found through sexual intimacy. Okay, why else is sex in marriage so important? Because it defends against temptation. Verse 6 says, we're like a slide or two ahead of you there, Jason. Verse 6 says, Satan has an ingenious way of tempting us when we least expect it.
Yes, sex is a powerful tool that can bind a couple together. So what better way for Satan to destroy our marriages than to screw up our sex lives? He's the one who's come to steal, kill, and destroy. Your spouse is not the enemy.
So when sex begins to dwindle, you know, that sexual frustration that you feel is really like God's nudge. It's God's physical reminder that you need to pay more attention to your marriages and not less. And personally, I understand this. If it goes too long between sex, I start to get agitated. You know, that's kind of God's nudge here. I get easily frustrated. I'm irritable at home. I find it more difficult to keep my thoughts pure. You know, all those things, I just think that's that temptation that's starting to creep in where sex can come and help
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, and an unhealthy sex life can weaken a marriage. It can cause negativity, it can cause anger, it can cause bitterness, and it makes the relationship vulnerable to infidelity and even divorce.
But how does sex actually help us to avoid temptation?
Glad you asked, yeah. Because it's scientific, and we like science.
Yeah.
So it has to do with oxytocin, which is a hormone which a lot of times you hear about when nursing mothers, that's how they bond with their babies because they release oxytocin. Oxytocin is actually released in the act of lovemaking and orgasm.
You said the O word in church.
There's no students.
Okay.
So, in this case, oxytocin promotes increased trust. It lets down our guard and it helps us bond even closer to our spouse. It actually prevents us seeking out other potential mates.
Yeah, and with each release of this oxytocin, our brains rebond with our spouse. So we're becoming more and more committed to each other, more satisfied with each other, and less likely to want to be satisfied by somebody else.
Every single time you make love. So a couple that has regular sexual intimacy can actually become addicted to one another. And in this case, we like that idea because that addiction means that that husband and that wife have learned to find their greatest pleasure through sexual intimacy with each other.
Right, and with each other, that reduces the risk of being tempted by someone else. So if we agree that sex is important in marriage, what is getting in the way of us living a more fulfilling sex life? You know, why aren't we having more sex? Why aren't we having better sex? Well, we think there's a lot of different reasons. We've picked out some highlights. There's certainly, this is not an exhaustive list.
And we can't dwell on every single point. And so if it hits you, there's a lot of other resources out there, okay?
Okay, so one of the things that gets in the way is our sexual history, specifically past relationships or maybe past sexual experiences. Sex outside of marriage, including before marriage, even before marriage with our spouse, is sin. And 1 Corinthians 6 says this, says, run from sexual sin. No other sin so clearly affects the body as this one does. For sexual immorality is a sin against your own body. You see, sexual sin is different, and it's not because God won't forgive. He certainly will if we ask. And it's not because God hates sexual sin more than others. He doesn't. But it's because of how significantly it can affect you and your future relationships, your future spouse.
Yeah, so when we have sex before marriage, we run the risk of bringing the consequences of this sin inside our marriage relationship. It can range anywhere from the person who had sex previously being guilty, feeling shameful. It could be that our spouse maybe feels angry at us for having done it, and maybe the spouse is afraid that she or he is being compared to previous partners.
Yeah, and God really designed sex for us to bond with our spouse and our spouse only. So the more of those sexual experiences we have, more of them outside of that, the more connections we're going to make, and then it becomes more difficult to attain that same bond with our spouse. God's ideal, you know, his perfect plan here is for us to wait until marriage to have sex. And he knows that sex isn't just physical. And the consequences of sex aren't just physical.
So maybe you're sitting here today and you are thinking, I blew that. Blew it. Forget about it. Okay, you cannot change the past, but you can change the present and you can change the future. And if there's one thing we learned from Jonah last month is that we serve a God of second chances. And so we encourage you, if that is your story, to say that's the end of that story and we're starting a new chapter today, and seek God for healing and restoration in that area in your marriage.
What else gets in the way when we start talking about sexual experiences? Well, pornography gets in the way. God created us for sexual intimacy with one person and one person only. And so having a sexual relationship with pornography can cause those same kind of bonding problems that we have if we have multiple partners. And no amount of pornography is ever going to satisfy that intimacy that our soul desires. According to Scripture, it's actually adultery. Pornography is adultery. And Jesus spoke on this in Matthew. You have heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. I think we can all agree that pornography and lust go hand in hand.
What else can get in the way? Maybe your sexual education or the lack thereof, because maybe you were told sex is dirty, sex is wrong, don't touch it. It's just for having babies. You're not supposed to enjoy sex. Or maybe were your parents actually affectionate with each other in front of you? Or did you grow up watching one parent constantly swat the hand of another parent away, refusing affection? We as parents need to be so careful what kind of message we're sending our children, because we want them to grow up to have healthy relationships in marriage.
And Christian culture has not helped this whole sexual education thing, because churches don't talk about sex, unless you come to MC3. The way churches do talk about sex is about how sinful it is, the sinful side of sex. So, you know, we should instead in churches be talking about what an amazing gift it is and what kind of an awesome connection it can make in our marriages. For sex education, I know for me personally, I never had a formal talk from my parents. In fact, the only thing that ever came close to sex education was before I would go on youth retreats when I was growing up. The last thing my dad would say before I went out the door is, keep it in your pants. Not quite the education dad that I was looking for. Okay.
And finally, in terms of sexual experiences that might be getting in the way of your sexual relationship now with your spouse would be sexual abuse. And you guys need to understand it. If that is your story, that that was not love, that that was hate, and that that was done out of evil, and it was not your fault. And there are resources and there is hope for you to overcome that. There is a book in the list that we have that we're going to give out to you guys that is specifically recommended for people who have a history of sexual abuse.
Right. And Jason, you can just stay here because you're a little ahead of us now. What other things can get in the way of our sex lives or improving our sex lives? Well, our present situation, because life happens. And we're talking about the stress and the busyness of life. Just a little more science here. When our stress levels go up, it also increases our cortisol levels, which is a hormone in our bodies. That lowers testosterone. Yes, men and women both have testosterone. When testosterone goes down, it reduces our libido, so our sex drives go down, and so does our energy. We found this out firsthand. Our first year of marriage, we were working odd jobs. Pretty much all we had to do was work and have sex, and so we did.
It worked. It was
great. But the second year, I went to optometry school, and which was very, very stressful. My libido plummeted, and unfortunately, Steph suffered through that. I wish I could go back and change it, but we saw this firsthand.
The other thing is so many of us have unforgiving schedules, whether it's kids or work or two shifts passing in the night. You know, kids, if they're young, just the schedule of keeping up with them, or maybe if they're older and in sports, we're running them all around. We just don't make time for us. And if you've got little kids, they're all over you all day long, and the last thing you want is to be touched when your husband gets home.
Yeah. You know, we add all sorts of commitments to our schedule, but we fail to schedule time with our spouse inside the bedroom and outside of the bedroom. In fact, that plan that we're doing on YouVersion right now just referenced this, that when after marriage, they did a survey, the average amount of time that we connect with our spouse in a day is 5 minutes. Before marriage, it was 3 hours. So quite a difference.
Yeah.
We can quickly lose our identity as a couple and become just two people living under the same roof. And we firmly believe you cannot have a healthy sex life if you do not have a healthy marriage first.
Nearly one-third of women ages 18 to 59 suffer from a lack of a sex drive. And it can go with whatever's going on in their life or whatever. But I remember back when, I think we had two boys at the time, and so Joel would have been really young. I just had no sex drive. And so I thought that it would make Justin feel better if I explained to him, it's not that I don't want to have sex with you. It's that I don't want to have sex with anyone.
That didn't really help.
I don't know why. Like, I'm not. Anyhow. But I've also said before, I want to have sex with you.
But this is a case where the thought doesn't count. You know, actions speak
like,
louder than words.
If I can send a card that says, I want to have sex with you, just not now.
Yeah, okay. What else gets in the way? Our health can get in the way. First off, let's talk about spiritual health. When we are seeking God individually and we are seeking God as a couple, we strengthen our spiritual bond with one another. So we're strengthening the bond between you and your spouse. And as we build this spiritual bond, then naturally this emotional bond kind of flows from that. And when you become more emotionally intimate with one another, typically you become more physically intimate with one another. So if our spiritual condition is lacking as a couple or as an individual, then you know you can see down the line that our physical intimacy can begin to suffer as well.
Mm-hmm. Also, our physical health can get in the way. Anything from pain with sex to performance issues, diabetes, obesity, thyroid, menopause, medication.
Yeah, I just read Dear Annie this week. I read Dear Annie every day. A young woman was writing into her because she was very frustrated. Her husband was on antidepressants, and it really killed his sex drive, and she was very young, wanting to be sexually active, and he wasn't willing to do anything to change it, and it was just a lot of frustration.
Yeah, and as an aside to that, we really believe that anxiety and depression do need to be treated, but there are lots of options out there in terms of medications, and some may not affect you as badly as others, and so you do need to speak with your doctor about that, especially if it's going to affect your sex drive.
Yeah, there was even a case that I read about a woman who had some surgery, and after the surgery, the husband went into the surgeon's office furious with him because after his wife had the surgery, her sex drive was just not there.
What kind of surgery was it?
It was cataract surgery. Oh, man, they didn't get it. Okay, all right, that's all right, that's all right. It's one of my favorite jokes, but that's all right. What else can affect the staff? What other things? What other health things?
Our emotional and psychological health, depression, low self-esteem, anxiety, past hurts from relationships that we can't let go of, a negative body image, The more we dwell on this, the more damaging it can be. And we're not going to cover the health topics much later, but we do want to say, if any of this is you, and or if there's anything in your health that you feel like is interfering with your sex drive, which is interfering with your relationship, please seek help. Medical doctors, counselors, therapists, but get help for it.
You're not going to say anything to them that they will be surprised by. Guaranteed.
Okay,
what else gets in the way? This is the big one here. Our gender gets in the way. Men and women, get this, folks. I know this is going to come as a surprise. Men and women view sex differently.
I know.
This is evidenced by the fact that sex is one of the leading causes of arguments in marriage. The big three are money, kids, and sex. And this has certainly been true in our life over the years. And it's also been true in Ray and Deborah Barone's relationship as well. So watch this.
Oh, not the flannel pajamas.
What?
What the? When you come to bed wearing that silky thing, I know I have a chance, but flannel pajamas, might as well be wearing a porcupine suit.
I'm so tired.
Yeah, man. But we had an appointment. Huh? See the rocket ship?
No, it's just that, I've been Christmas shopping all day, and then I just got the twins down, and I'm just not in the mood.
You don't have to be in the mood. I mean, just start, and you can get in the mood. It's like you're invited to a party that you don't want to go to, so you figure, I'm just going to stop by, say hello. And when you get there, the next thing you know, you're swinging at the pinata, wearing a hat.
I'm not going to the party, Ray.
You can't just not go. At least spend the gift.
You know, it's not always me. What about last week when I was in the mood and you weren't?
When was that?
Wednesday. You were watching TV. I asked you to give me a back rub.
Yeah,
you gave me one of these one-handed deals.
Wait a minute. You asked for a back rub, and that means Mr. Smith goes to Washington? Come on. Why didn't you say something?
Well, what am I supposed to say? Hey, come on. You want some? Let's do it.
I would love it if you talk like that.
After all these years, you still have no idea, do you?
Look, I know you have to be in the mood, but can't you just this once think like a man?
I am. I'm completely disregarding your feelings.
You tell Mr. Smith that.
Almost everything we know came from Ray and Deborah.
Right? Yeah.
Like, were they in our bedroom?
No, but our gender gets in the way. And so we're going to back and forth here a little bit about some differences or from things the way men and women see it that can get in the way, why they do. So men pursue romance based on sexual passion. You know, there doesn't have to be any other form of intimacy for most of us before sex can happen. It can just be like, boom, we're there. Sex is the primary way that most men show and express love.
Women, on the other hand, sex is not the primary way they show and express love. Women pursue romance based on relationship, emotional intimacy, non-sexual physical
touch. Make it so difficult.
Women need to feel intimate emotionally before they can even feel intimate sexually. A woman wants to know every day that her husband chooses her above everything and everyone else. She wants to feel close to her husband. She wants to know that he's committed to their family, and he can show that by just playing with their kids. Because when a woman sees a man playing with their kids, then she feels closer to him.
And foreplay, right? Foreplay begins.
So for a woman, yeah. Foreplay starts way outside the bedroom, and I'm not just talking about the couch.
That's a good place, but that's not what we're talking about here. For men, sex builds self-confidence, okay? It makes us feel better about ourselves. It improves our overall well-being. I think we think clearer if we're having sex. It gives us a better outlook on life because sex is energizing for a man.
For women, the thought of sex can be draining. At the end of a very long day, she is always multitasking, working, cooking, laundry, taking care of the kids, wondering, am I doing a good job as a mom? Am I a good wife? I don't know. She struggles with turning off the stress in order to turn on the passion, because women just can't compartmentalize what's going on. They tend to need to feel good about themselves first before they're even open to sexual intimacy.
Men, think that if we connect through sex, our relationship issues will be solved. We tend to evaluate the health of our relationship by how often, by how often we're having sexual encounters, by the frequency of our sexual encounters. You know, if we're having it often, man, if we're having it a couple times a week, things must be pretty darn good, because we think that sex fixes everything.
Women, everything needs to be fixed first before we're going to have sex, right? Like, it's the opposite. We evaluate the health of our relationship by the strength of our friendship with our husband. Sex comes second.
Maybe you should try sex first. Men, life is better for men when they know that their wives are equally enjoying their sexual experiences together. For men, we don't just want to be satisfied. We want to be able to satisfy our wives. I feel this has perfectly been the case in our marriage. You know, I don't want Steph to not be enjoying it when we're having sex. I want her to be engaged, involved, because that makes me more fulfilled. I want to see her respond. I want to connect with her while we're making love. I don't want her to just lay there like a log. She does not do that, thankfully, but there you go. So much of who we are as men is tied up in how our wives respond to us sexually.
And for women, so much of who we are as women is tied up in how our husbands respond to us emotionally and relationally. Are you getting the theme?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So for women, life is better when we share emotional closeness and affection with our husbands. And when he's sensitive to our daily needs and when he helps us around the house, we become more interested in him physically, and can we respond to him better physically?
So if we believe that sex is important, but we know that there are some things that get in the way of that, how do we improve our sex lives? We believe that an improved sex life doesn't happen just by chance. It takes work. And no matter how long we've been married, there's always room for improvement. Clifford and Joyce Penner, they're psychologists, sex therapists, authors. They say that 100% of couples, that's all of you, 100%.
That's all y'all.
Can achieve a mutually satisfying sexual relationship. But only a third of couples can achieve this organically. The other two-thirds has to work on it. I would argue that everybody has to work on it, just some have to work harder than others. But this isn't just about having better sex. I mean, that's great. But it's about experiencing all that God has intended for our marriages. I mean, so how do we do that?
So how do we do that? Well, let's start with reconnecting and having us time. It's what John and Kara talked about last week. And you can start by praying together. Heck, pray about your sex life together. So just a couple months ago, I was really stressed about something, and we were going to bed. We were seriously going to bed. And right before we went to sleep, Justin said, I want to pray for you about this. So I was like, okay, cool.
And just so you know, I mean, we're not spiritual giants.
He doesn't often pray for
us. We don't often pray for each other. We should, but we don't. Okay.
So he prayed. He was amazing. And then I kissed him goodnight. And I didn't stop because the guy just totally connected with me.
But it goes back to what we said earlier about having that spiritual connection,
yeah,
which can lead to emotional and physical connection.
Right,
as well.
But praying together is a good starting point.
Yeah.
Outside of that, pursue your spouse daily. Little things like send a text message, hold hands, kiss. So I read somewhere that you should focus on your greeting at the end of the day when you and your spouse come back together, whether you both work or one's home or whatever, but when you reunite at the end of the day, like, set the tone and kiss your spouse. So I started seeking him out when he gets home, because usually I'm busy cooking dinner or whatever. He walks in the door, and the dog acts like she's way more excited to see him than I am.
Oh, yeah, she looks my face and everything. Like.
Yeah, so I'm, like, getting jealous. So I started seeking him out to kiss him when he walks in the door, and that just totally sets the tone for the rest of the night of interactions between...
Yeah. What about sending, like, text messages, like sexy pictures?
I don't think you should.
I think you should.
No, because sometimes you think you delete it, and then it wasn't deleted. I'm just saying, like, that can happen. I've heard.
We disagree about this. Hey, we need to take time to be together, and this does not have to be anything fancy. It does not have to be anything expensive. You know, watch a movie together on Prime. Go rent Redbox. Cost you, what, a buck 80 or whatever it is now. Feed the kids early, set them up with a movie, and then you guys have candlelight together or just at least have dinner without a bunch of interruptions. Read a book together. We've been reading a book here the last month or so as we've prepared for this talk. We'll talk more about that later. Walk the dog together and talk. I mean, these are little things that don't cost much.
No, but just investing a little bit more and reconnecting every day. Other things you can do is actual activities together, because doing activities together promotes intimacy. Sometimes it's conquering something or working hard together. We actually stack wood together. You can tell. But I find that we talk more when we're stacking wood than if we go out to dinner and sit face to face. It's just something about moving around and working hard and accomplishing something together, and it just stimulates conversation. Mm-hmm. Other things you can do would be do something fun, do something crazy, do something stupid, do something scary, but build memories with your spouse and reconnect and get to know who they are, because we're always changing. You can exercise together. That's good for both of you. It promotes blood flow to places. It also just builds self-esteem for both of you. And, incidentally, we once read that post-sex orgasm is pretty incredible.
Yeah, just shower first.
Shower.
And, hey, if you want to work out by having sex, it burns 5 calories a minute. Hey, also, I think it's really important that at least one time a year you try to go overnight. No, not that you try. That you go overnight away with your spouse and just your spouse, so leaving the kids at home. This is just getting out.
Well, like with an adult.
Yeah. This is just getting out of the routine. And before you can say, hey, wait, I don't have money to do that, listen. You save $5 a week for a year. You have plenty of money to go to a nice hotel, pay for all your meals, and get with the gas money to get there.
$5 a week? That's less than a cup of coffee a day.
I know. It's like an infomercial, right?
Yes.
But you know, we've gone to State College, Harrisburg. We don't go anywhere.
We don't go far.
Fancy.
We just go away.
We just get away.
Yeah.
Speaking of kids, and we do love kids, by the way, but you need to establish and keep a bedtime for your kids every night. And firm believers that kids need their own bedrooms. The bedroom needs to be
a place.
Well,
not your bedroom. They can share.
Oh, sorry, yeah. They just have to be out of your bedroom. They need to have their own bed. There's always going to be exceptions to this, and small babies can be an exception, but we really believe that that bedroom needs to be a place for you and your spouse. Have kid-free time with your spouse, and not just on days that you're planning on getting it on. You know, maybe you get rid of the kids by exchanging babysitting with friends. Maybe you have the grandparents watch the kids. But just being able to spend time alone, reconnecting with your spouse is so important. The point is this, even when we have kids in the house, we need to figure out a way to make alone time happen.
Yeah, and when the kids are home, lock your door. Lock your door, lest a 3-year-old come in on the night when mommy said it's okay to leave the light on. Because the tag itches on his pajama shirt.
And nothing breaks the mood like an itchy tag on a 3-year-old.
And that shirt went in the trash the next day. I wasn't even going to mess with that one.
Yeah.
Lock your door.
Hey, how else? Reconnect. How do we reconnect? We reconnect by scheduling sex. You know, spontaneity, hey, that's a bonus, but it's not usually realistic. If you wait for it to be spontaneous, you might be waiting a very long time. We make time for what's important in our lives. Why should sex be any different?
So, on nights that you know that you and your spouse are going to have sex, set a bedtime for the both of you so that you're not going to bed super late. And also, don't let sex become the last thing on a list of lots of things that you've done throughout the day. Us time needs to take priority. So, leave those little chores, leave the dishes, leave the garage or whatever for another time, because your relationship matters more.
That's right. So another thing we can do to improve our sex lives, we need to recharge. We need some me time. So be sure that you are doing things that make you feel good about yourself as an individual, things that energize you, that get you out of your routine. You know, if you fill your cup, you're going to be better able to pour that into your spouse. If your cup is empty, you really have nothing else to give. And what does this look like? Hey, lots of different things. You know what it is for you. Maybe it's a massage, a hot bath. Maybe it's drinking coffee alone, reading a good book, working out, fishing, hunting, as long as you don't disappear for like 3 months hunting. But lots of different things that can energize you as a person.
Also, take a nap. Take a power nap. It doesn't have to take that long. But if you know tonight my husband and I are getting jiggy with it, then take a nap. Find 15 minutes just to rest and rejuvenate. Wives, go out with your girlfriends, and guys, go out with your guy friends, because studies show that people who make time for friendships are actually healthier.
How else do we improve our sex lives? We need to rethink sex. Here's going to be a little banter back and forth with men and women. So men, listen to this. Sex needs to happen outside the bedroom, and we're not talking about a different location. Your wife needs to feel pursued. So just like when you were dating her, she needs to see that you are interested in her. That can start off real simple by asking her about her day, telling her about your day, making eye contact, actually using words and not just grunts when you're talking to her, turning off the TV. Also, this non-sexual affection that Steph referred to earlier, a kiss, a hug, a pat in the behind, but doing it with no strings attached, meaning there's no expectation that those things are going to lead to anything else. You need to find ways to let your wife know that you desire her more than you desire sex. Okay? Treat her like the most important person in the world, because she should be the most important person in your world. If she is not, there are some deeper issues there that need to be addressed. Work at proving that you desire her for who she is, not what she can do for you in the bedroom. When she sees all of this, she sees you wanting to be emotionally connected to her, her desire for you will grow sexually, will grow physically. And I love this little comment. Write it down, put it in your brain, whatever you want to do. Cherish her heart, and you'll get to cherish her body. We need to realize as men, realize that sex for a woman is emotional first and physical second.
But ladies, we need to realize that sex for a man is physical first and emotional second. So just like women want to be pursued romantically, emotionally, and relationally by their husbands, men want to be pursued sexually by their wives. He becomes more connected with you emotionally through sex. So trust that he wants more than just a physical connection with you when he's asking for sex. And trust that reaching out sexually to your husband will be way more fulfilling for the both of you than if you were to just shut it out and shut him down. When you sexually pursue your husband, you build him up emotionally. On the other hand, shutting him out sexually is going to crush his spirit.
So this is such an important idea, this emotional versus physical, the men versus women. We just want to summarize it in a slide. So, you know, how do we pursue our wives? Go ahead, Jason. How do we pursue our wives here? How do we pursue a woman? Next thing there. So, oh man, there's all kinds of things. We can write her a poem, take her to dinner, hold her hand, go for a walk, wash your car, clean the house, buy her. I mean, the list goes on. There's so many different things.
Yeah, so that's really good. Those are really good.
Yep.
Those will work too. So, and ladies, how do you pursue a man? This is really, go ahead, get naked.
It's no more difficult than that. I mean, ladies, you have it so easy. There's one thing on that slide. So many things for guys. I mean, I feel overwhelmed.
You have a lot to remember.
We do.
Yeah.
Men, get this. Along the line of sex starting outside the bedroom, we need to show our wives we love them by helping around the house. We need to be asking her, what can I do to help? Not, do you want me to help? Because she might say no,
because she might think, well, you got other stuff going on.
Right.
So I don't want
you show your commitment to her when you do things like regularly getting up from dinner and cleaning off the table, when you wash the dishes without being asked, when you run the bath for the kids or get them into bed. Ephesians 5 says, husbands, go all out in your love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church. A love marked by giving and not getting. But here's the thing. We don't do these things. We don't help around the house without being asked with the expectation that they're going to lead to sex. My best man at our wedding gave us some advice before we got married. He said, sex is not wampum. Wampum is trade items that the Native Americans used to use with the settlers, like beads and so on. So sex is not wampum. It is not for trade. So you do these things because you love her, not because you're hoping to have sex with her. So guys, helping needs to become a way of life, not just on nights we want to get frisky.
And ladies, letting him help needs to become a way of life. And don't assume that he's helping you just because he wants to have sex with you later. We need to work on believing the best about our husbands. And it may not get done exactly how you would have done it, but do not criticize him and do not put him down for his efforts. Your husband wants you to need him, because men are inherently providers and protectors and problem solvers. If he realizes the importance of what we're talking about here today, he's going to be all over your kitchen tonight trying to help you.
All over it. Men, I can't believe I have to say this, but when we were reading, this is a big thing that comes up in marriage counseling. It is what it is. Men, keep your body clean and well-groomed. You did it when you were dating. You should continue to do it now. Just because you got the girl doesn't mean you have the right to let yourself go. So one of those things, hey, shower before sex. I think it's gross if you don't, but maybe there are people out there that do. I think it's gross. A lot of women have a keen sense of smell, so we want to use that for our favor or in our favor rather than to our detriment. Guys, focus more on your body.
Some of you are nudging. I see that. Yeah. Anyhow.
That's gross. I don't want to know.
Ladies, focus less on your bodies. And I don't mean hygiene. I mean your body image will greatly affect your ability to fully give yourself to your spouse. So do whatever it takes to learn to love your body, or at least to criticize it far less. Exercise produces endorphins and actually makes us feel better about ourselves. You also need to embrace the fact that your spouse loves your body.
We do.
There's a song by Trace Atkins. It's called One Hot Mama. And he says, you know, I know you think that you're just the mom with the kids in the car and that you can't even fit in your old jeans. I don't care, because every time I look at you, all I see is one hot mama.
Those good country songs, I'll tell you. So many relationship tidbits from country
songs.
Yeah,
I know. That's why we're still married. Yeah.
Your wife, get this. I know this is going to come as a surprise. Your wife's hormones are constantly in flux. What? They cause changes in what feels good to her. Childbirth can affect this further. Age can affect this further. So, and this is a little tricky here, but in the bedroom, ask her what she wants. And keep in mind that her response on Monday might be different than her response on Friday, because don't assume that you know how to please her.
And ladies, don't assume that your husband should know how to please you. It's not wrong to tell your husband or show your husband what feels good and what you want. In fact, it's more effective than him trying to guess at it.
Yeah, don't make us guess. That never goes well.
So learn where your own buttons are and learn to be more assertive in showing and asking your husband to press them. You women can experience sexual ecstasy, and it will drive your man crazy. And I mean that in a good way.
It will. Men, and this is a hard one for me. This has been the source of our contention a lot. When your wife doesn't want sex, this doesn't mean that she doesn't love you, or that you don't turn her on, or that she's not happy. This is one of the hardest things for me, because when I'm interested and Steph is not, I take that as almost like a personal slight. You know, how could you not be interested in sex with me? You know, do you not find me attractive? Am I not doing it for you at this point? And that's been a tough thing to overcome, and probably still haven't overcome that. But remember that she might value the emotional connection and that non-sexual affection over sex. Back earlier in our marriage, Steph asked me a question. She said, "What can I do to be a better wife?"
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, he's going to say, well, the bathroom could be cleaned, or you could cook different meals, or talk to me nicer, you know, things that I could change.
But what I told her was, you could want sex more.
Yeah, that was hard.
Yeah. Understand, then, that sex may not be as important to your wife as it is to you.
Ladies, we need to understand that sex is so important to our husbands that it needs to be important to us. One day I said to Justin, can't we just fist bump?
Yeah, fist bump is not the same as bump, I'll tell you that.
But just because he maybe wants sex more than you, and this is generalizing, we realize that one in five couples, it's opposite, and women want sex more than men. We're speaking to the general population, but don't accuse your husband of being a sex addict just because he's asking for sex more than you want to give sex. It's how God wired him. And there's this quote I'm going to read by Bill Farrell, which cut me, because it really made me realize, and I learned a lot in studying to teach. Learned a lot about how Justin thinks, even though all along he was telling me this stuff, but I thought he was just crazy. Anyhow.
Yeah, and I felt the same way. I mean,
you're probably different. Anyhow, Bill Farrell says, in the midst of our busy life, I know I run the risk of creating another expectation that she feels she must meet, but I have no idea how not to be physically attracted to her. Women have the opportunity to graciously meet that sexual need of their husband and fulfill him, or we can choose to use it to manipulate him and cause him to become resentful. And while we're at it, choose to initiate sex more. Try it. You'll want to do it. You say that, it'll speak volumes.
Oh, it's
man.
On like Donkey Kong if you say that. This is for men and women about rethinking sex. What else?
Well, one thing is almost always true in rethinking sex. Whoever wants sex the least has the most power. So if you're the spouse who holds that power, your character is going to be tested. Will you choose to use your power generously or manipulatively? And we have to realize that it's not permissible for anyone else to sexually fulfill our spouse.
Right. ask yourself, and this is the question that kind of wraps up this section, but ask yourself honestly this question. If God looked at nothing else other than your sexual relationship, would he see you honoring his design for marriage? All right, so how do we improve sex? Remodel the routine. This is going to be a fun one. Maybe it's time to mix it up to spice it up. So what are we talking about here? Well, let's talk about positions. Not in detail, of course, but there are tons of positions out there, folks.
On the screen.
Yeah. As a couple, you need to figure out which ones you like. And just because we're in church doesn't mean it has to be missionary every time.
Right.
So it's okay to laugh at yourself during sex when you're
Seriously,
trying these positions.
We have laughed.
We've laughed.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Mix it up. Change the location. Doesn't always have to be in the bedroom, but we do recommend closing the blinds if you're somewhere else. Song of Solomon. In the Bible, it talks about them making love in a vineyard. Now, we've never made it love in
Probably want to get permission.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
We've never made love in a vineyard, but we were on vacation here this summer at the Outer Banks at our beach house.
Nobody's ever going to vacation with us
again. No. Anyway, we were next to the ocean. It was a nice moon and everything. And so
we were on the third floor.
Hey, let's go out and, get it on the deck. And we went out there, and we're in our birthday suits. And sure enough, a couple minutes, and we look over, and there's a neighbor watching television right next door in the house next
door. Their blinds were open.
Yeah, we went inside.
Yep.
Okay, what else do we do to mix it up?
So mix it up the time of day. In surveys, the men prefer the morning, and the women tend to prefer the evening. So why not meet in the middle for a nooner?
You could do that sometime.
I know. I've offered that to you before.
It's hard to get home and back in time. How else do we mix it up? Mix it up by lingerie. And now, listen, you need to hear us out on this because it does have benefit for both spouses. But men, we are so visual, and we think that our ladies are beautiful, and they're one hot mamas. And naked is great. We're never going to argue with naked, just to let you know. But satin and lace just add that extra dimension. And some of that's because we know that our wives went through a little bit of extra effort and made it just a little more special for us.
Yeah. And ladies, we need to drop the thought that if you want to see me in lingerie, that means my naked body isn't enough for you. Because, yes, I've thought that before. But rethink it this way. When you put that lace or that satin on, you actually feel sexier. And so if you're not in the mood, it helps to put something on. Not to mention the idea that you're going to get your husband even more excited because he saw you make that extra effort. And it gets you a little bit more wanting that intimacy with him. But men, it is not okay to buy lingerie for your wife, like for her birthday or for Christmas, okay?
But women, if you want to buy something for yourself for our birthdays or Christmas or Memorial Day or 4th of July, Armistice Day, President's Day, we're not going to argue with that at all. How else do we mix it up? You can use mirrors, enough said about that. You can change the lighting, candles, lights on, lights off, just lock the door. Music, we've done a music playlist last year that I gave her to for our anniversary, I think.
Yeah,
and
cool.
We use music in the background sometimes. But get this, whatever you do to mix it up, both of you have to agree on it. Remember, love does not demand your own way, so you will not demand this of your spouse. But do not automatically shoot down your spouse's suggestions. Talk about it. Take time to process it and go forward.
Also, it is never okay to let somebody else in your bedroom that would include a third person or pornography.
Right. How do we improve sex? We revolutionize it. First thing, we talk about it. Most couples do not communicate well when it comes to sex. We're going to talk about communication next week with the Fitches. But if you're feeling unfulfilled, you need to be able to discuss this openly and honestly with one another. And if your spouse tells you that they are not fulfilled, they need to be able to trust that you're not going to get mad at them for bringing it up.
Yeah, and it's best to have these conversations outside of the bedroom, not right before you're about to have
sex. Never have serious conversations when you're getting ready to do
it. If you want to talk about it, plan a way and a time to get together and talk about it away from the bedroom. Ladies need to be able to ask their husband for more romance. For him to pursue her more romantically without him getting defensive and saying, well, I don't have time for that. And men need to be able to ask their wives to respond to him sexually more without her getting defensive and saying, well, I'm not comfortable with that, so that's not going to happen. We need to be able to approach each other softly and hear each other out and communicate in a healthy and non-threatening environment.
And it's not okay to be talking to someone else, aside from your spouse, about sexual issues if you're not also going to talk to your spouse. Now, I don't mean that you can't seek out counsel. Counsel is fine if you're seeking that. Just you can't seek someone out strictly to complain about your spouse.
Okay, how else do we revolutionize? Well, we act on it. And I don't mean have sex. That's coming later. But we act on it by working at improving our sex life, by reading books about it, by going to marriage seminars. And there are a lot of websites like Focus on the Family and Family Life, so tons of resources out there to help you understand what's going on in our sex life and how can we make it better.
Right, even YouVersion has multiple plans about sex. I've seen some of them. They're really good plans. You can seek them out. But listen, sex now doesn't have to look like sex did for you 5 years ago, 5 months ago, 5 days ago. Don't get stuck in a rut as to what sex is supposed to look like.
And here it is. Have more sex, because sex begets sex. There's actual science behind this, too. Because sex increases the release of chemicals related to desire, one of them being dopamine. So consider that every time you make love to your spouse, you reinforce your oneness and strengthen your bond. So why not have more sex?
Yeah, why not?
Yep. In a study of happiness of marriages, married couples who had sex less than one time per week were less fulfilled than those couples who had sex at least once per week. But you need to decide as a couple what frequency looks like for you and what you're both comfortable with and what you'll both be fulfilled with.
In our opinion, I certainly feel that their study that once a week, I think, is a good starting point. I'll tell you a quick story. The fella who we've been reading, we read a book called Sheet Music by Kevin Lehman. We're actually going to give you a copy on the way out. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But Kevin Lehman, when he wrote this book, was probably in his 60s. He really likes sex.
He's very happy to
He's
have
very
a
happy
book about
sex.
He wrote like 20 books about sex.
Oh, there's lots.
Every time he's just as excited about writing about sex.
So anyway, he's probably in his 60s when he's writing this book, but he talks in later chapters about, you know, as we get older, that we may have to adjust the frequency of our sex.
Yes,
and so he said that he and his wife recently decided they need to cut it down to 4 times a week. So, hey, that gives us something to strive for, I guess. That seems like a lot. So anyway, as we kind of wrap up this morning, here's the big question. Is sex uniting or dividing you and your spouse?
Because if it's a source of conflict and division, then it's not what God has intended for your marriage. Because He wants to bless our marriages and He wants to be glorified through our sexual intimacy. So why wouldn't we make it a priority to work toward an intimate and a healthy and a fulfilling sex life?
And back to kind of our original point, God's design is for married couples to have sex regularly. Anything other than that falls short of the best for you, because marriage works when you follow God's plan for sex. I'm going to pray here in just a moment, and I'm going to give you some quick instructions here for the way out. So, you know, let's pray. God, we thank you so much for this time this morning to talk about a topic that just is not broached very often in church world. But, man, we also thank you for sex. We thank you for how it can be used to unite us as a couple, to draw us closer together. And we know that that is your ultimate and ideal design for our marriages. God, we know that there's lots of things that come in the way of that, so I just pray that if those things are standing in the way of us improving our sex lives, that we would be willing and able to and just feel vulnerable enough, comfortable enough to talk to our spouse about what it is and then work together to work through those things. And if it means, you know, seeking out a counselor, if it means seeking out a doctor, that we'd be willing to do that just because we realize how important this is for the marriage just keep that marriage the way you intended it to be. And ultimately, God, we want to be glorifying to you in our marriages, and certainly improving our sex lives is one of the ways that we can do that. Give us a great rest of the day. It's in your name. Amen. So listen, we on the way out, I feel really strongly that we need to have resources about sex. And this book that we read, even though Kevin is really maybe
happy,
a little over the top, he has some great points in there, and a lot of what we used this morning came based on some of his points. So we have a copy of Sheet Music there. Every married couple on the way out, please get one copy of Sheet Music. If you're not married, I'm sorry. We are not giving you a copy. There's also a resource list that has other books that you might want to check out. It has some names of some counselors in this general area that deal with marriage issues and sexual issues. And it also has some websites you might want to check out that have marriage and sex resources on them. So you get that on the way out.